I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Happy September. Here we are, rolling along in 2011, and we've got some really great stuff coming up, and I want to jump right into it. So, you know, on this show, we talk about food, my favorite subject, and about how food affects our health, the environment, and certainly the other beings that some people call food on this planet. And we talk about a lot of things because what's amazing is that food, which so many of us take for granted, is so essential, of course, to our health. But we really need to connect the dots and see how the whole process of growing food, creating food, manufacturing food, eating food, how it affects us in so many ways. And sometimes food is not so healthy for us. There's good food and there's bad food. And when you get toxic, when you get sick, and when you need help, there's lots of different ways to go about healing. And we're going to talk about some herbal healing, specifically for children. We're going to be talking with Demetria Clark, the author of a new book, Herbal Healing for Children. And she is a North American herbalist specializing in herbals for pregnancy, birth, postpartum, nursing, and children. She is a traditional family herbalist. She has worked with families for over 20 years as an herbalist, aromatherapist, midwife, doula, and traditional medicine maker. She works extensively in the U.S. and Europe, blending the two traditions. Demetria lectures extensively on herbal care for sexuality, pregnancy, and women's health. Demetria believes in families having options to self-empower and have health and wellness options. She is the founder and director of Heart of Herbs Herbal School, and two websites to make note of, heartofherbs.com and the doula training program Birth Arts International at birtharts.com. Welcome, Demetria, to It's All About Food.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. So, you know, I find herbs fascinating, and there's a wealth of tradition and history and healing, and I often ask myself, how did we get to where we are today? It's a crazy, crazy place where some of the simplest things that could be so helpful, people have so many stigmas attached to them. And herbal healing has gone through a variety of cycles, I think, in the course of humanity. And specifically, I mean, you write in your book about all these different cultures that have used herbs for thousands of years, and so much of that we've forgotten.
Oh, yes, definitely. It's a very sad reflection of our past and hopefully not our future.
Right. Well, I know that so many Americans are always looking for the quick fix. Do you want the blue pill or the red pill? But something easy, something to pop in our mouths and make the immediate symptoms go away. And I'm hoping that we're maybe going backwards a little in a positive way and learning that the quick fix is not always the best fix. And some of these more sophisticated pharmaceuticals are not really what's best. Sometimes they can really help, but we definitely need a balance. And so you're involved with herbal healing, and how did that start?
Well, it really was an organic process. It was something that I just started having an interest in childhood. So it wasn't, I didn't have a great epiphany. I didn't go through an illness or anything like that. It was just something that just seemed to be part of me as a child. I was always curious. And then it grew. And then as I grew up, I began to have a more formal education in herbalism. But it wasn't really a conscious choice. I don't know if that makes any sense, but it was just part of who I was.
Well, no, I applaud that because you were following your bliss, as they say, as Joseph Campbell would say, and so many people, I think, ignore those natural intuitions because they're bombarded with so many different signals from everyone around them. And so it's good that you picked up on that because it's really important what you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you.
So how did you learn? Because there's so much that's been lost. Where do you find the information?
I listen to people. When I was really little, I listened to people. I would ask a lot of questions. I was probably that little obnoxious kid that never shut up.
Why?
I probably still am. But my mother's husband at the time was in the Coast Guard, and so we were in Alaska and Oregon and North Carolina, and there are people from different cultures. I was from the White Mountains of New Hampshire. So there were people from, you know, in a military environment. There are people literally from all over the United States. And I would just ask people questions. Well, why are you eating, you know, this kind of green? Or that looks like a weird leaf. What's that? And people were nice to me. And, they, you know, that was the main thing. I think if someone was mean to me really young, I don't know if that would have stopped. And then my mother was into culinary herbs, and so I, you know, I've always liked cooking, so that was interesting. And you know, it just kind of was my grandparents. My grandfather is the world's best storyteller, and so he'd tell us stories, and if he'd mention something that his grandmother would use, or you know, and it just kind of came from this place of, okay, I already know what I'm supposed to be doing, you know. And it was just a matter of allowing myself to take in the information. And then I hung around with a lot of hippies as I was growing up. So, you know, that helped. And they were all very nice to me. And, you know, I was so young and everyone was really nice and charming.
Well,
so.
I you talk about how you followed the Grateful Dead. And I'm sure there's a whole nother book there.
Yeah, someone's been joking that I should have written a screenplay instead of an herbal book about that.
Well, maybe that's the next thing.
Yeah, because my husband's on board with that, because he is the other part of the story. So.
Yeah, that was a pretty incredible culture for its time, and there are some good things that came out of it, and maybe some not so good things. But just like herbal healing, there are. I mean, we certainly don't know everything, and I'm all about balance. I'm not about moderation, and I want to make that clear because I don't like the word moderation, but I do like the word balance. For example, there's a few shows on television, and I certainly don't watch television very often, but I know that, like on the Dr. Oz show, for example, they're always looking for different things to have on the show, because how many things can you talk about every day? And people come on the show sometimes and talk about old wives' tales or traditional remedies, and then they kind of decide whether they're real or not. And the few shows I've seen, they're kind of ridiculous, because some of these remedies have never really been through clinical trials, so we don't have official science behind them. But, you know, so many of them have been helpful for so many people, and a lot of them really don't have any serious side effects, so you don't really lose by trying them.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And also, when it comes to clinical trials with anything, you have to look at where the source is from.
Absolutely.
So if a pharmaceutical company that is making a competing drug with an herbal remedy that they are then funding the clinical trial for, you're probably not going to get the best results. And unfortunately, the people that can fund clinical trials aren't always as friendly to herbal medicine as they can be.
Right.
And because I think they have a need to prove it to be something other than it is.
Well, unfortunately, we know that most of the studies come from businesses that see a potential in making a profit from a particular product. And there isn't a lot of funding behind truly objective studies.
No, you're right.
And okay, so that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
And the other thing is this thing about patents. Now, I'm sure when the concept of a patent came about, it was really a good thing to protect some really creative invention or idea that someone came up with. But patents have really gotten out of hand to the point where people are looking to patent everything they can get their hands on to get a financial advantage on a product. And a lot of these traditional herbal remedies, you can't patent them.
No, you can't patent. Well, but they are trying to patent some of the plants.
Yes, they are.
But, I mean, not only can you not patent them, like you said, no two herbalists are going to make anything exactly the same. So if you test something that is, in theory, made exactly the same by me and you, and we're in two different areas, the medicine that we make won't be the same because our soil is different, our air is different, our water supplies are different, and that all makes a big difference. So that's one of the reasons why I'm really into parents, if possible, if they can make some of their own remedies, doing it from their own local environment, because your local environment knows how to take care of your body because you drink that water, you breathe that air, you eat the food from there, you're used to the microbes in the soil, and just, you know, really reinforcing that connection that you have with your own backyard.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Back to the idea that people want a quick fix and a pill, you go into a lot of recipes, I should say, and a lot of methods to create all kinds of different things, salves and tinctures and a lot of things that are out of my vocabulary. but, you know, most people, in this country, we're so into convenience. And I'm always encouraging people just to get back into the kitchen, number one, and start creating some very simple, nutritious food so you don't consume all kinds of toxic chemicals that are going to make you and your children sick. And then on top of that, to create some of these things, people have to find the products and make them. So how do you convince parents, busy parents with young children, to create some of these things?
Well, if I was in a consultation with a client who was saying, I really don't have time to do all this, I would, you know, say, okay, well, let me teach you how to do it, and then you can teach your friends. And then I hear reports back, well, four of us got together, and we all made cough syrup. So that not only can it be a community activity where you're getting together with your girlfriends or boyfriends or whatever, but you can also, you're creating medicine, you're creating something together, and you're socializing at the same time. So not making it this big, oh, my gosh, I have to do this, but, hey, let's get together and do this. And making it part of our social conversation and a way that we can get together and hang out and do something fun. A lot of parents will say, oh, I don't know if I have time. But then they start doing it and they kind of get addicted. Oh, my gosh, it worked. I have to try something else. Or, oh, my goodness, I used that balm on my husband's back. And, oh, he feels so great today. He was, you know, laying brick all weekend. And, you know, so it's kind of, you know, it's kind of empowering to just do some of it on your own. And, of course, there are quality products all over the place. You can also find them at your farmer's market, and those will be made locally. You can, you know, in little stores and health food stores, and, you know, but in every city, in every town in the United States, there's herbalists. And they may not call themselves herbalists. They may say they make herbal products and they're a soap maker, but finding out what's going on in your community is a great way to get access to different herbal medicines.
I love the whole idea about building community. I really, really love that. And although I am a big supporter of technology and all of the benefits of global relationships, we need to find a balance there too. And I think we could do more in our local communities by growing food and purchasing products from our local suppliers and getting together and creating some great herbal remedies. I love that.
Definitely. And I think if someone's listening and they say, oh, that's a good idea, remember to ask the people, even people that you don't think would be into it, because you'll be really surprised. There's a lot of people who really want to learn this stuff, but if you just look at someone's outside, you may be thrown off. But seriously, you know, even, you know, just putting the word out, you'd be surprised who's interested
right.
in this kind of
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I really love that. Now, I just I want to talk most about the positive benefits, but just one more thing that's maybe not so positive, and that is there's a lot of talk about herbal remedies or holistic remedies that you can find in stores, and some of them which come from other countries. I remember reading stuff, things coming from India that weren't entirely pure and contained some particularly problematic ingredients.
I personally, as an herbalist, I am a Western herbalist. I don't believe, for environmental reasons and factors that are out of my control, I don't purchase anything from another country. So I don't use herbs that aren't grown in the United States. And the reason why I do that is 9 times out of 10 I can grow them myself. If I can't grow it myself, I can talk to the person who did grow it. So I know it's history. And also, I think it's very counterintuitive to pay for something that is coming over on, we know that cargo ships are some of the worst polluters of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So then they're coming over on a cargo ship, they're getting irradiated, because everything that goes through customs has to be. So, you know, people forget that when it comes to herbs.
Really good point, yeah.
And then they have to be trucked, and then they have to be shipped. It just seems like, oh, what a waste of time and money. Maybe it's a little bit cheaper, but in the long run, with my tax dollars and my environment, it's a lot more expensive. So I'll probably get some hate mail from somebody now. But I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Absolutely. And, you know, I really wish that we were paying the true cost of things, because we're certainly not. I mean, how possibly could it be less expensive to buy some simple herb from India or from China instead of buying it here? It just doesn't make any sense at all.
No, I agree.
And I love the idea of growing your own. Okay, maybe you did follow the Grateful Dead, and there's a bit about growing your own who knows what.
No.
I live in New York City, and I have a terrace, and in the growing season, I have all kinds of pots outside and grow lots of different herbs, and the most fun thing is that so many of them just come back without even planting seeds, and I've got dill and a variety of other things, and it's so easy to grow your own herbs, so I love that, indoors or outdoors.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people separate kitchen herbs, like cooking herbs, from medicinal herbs. But a lot of your culinary herbs are very medicinal. So you can say to yourself even, I have a medicinal herb garden, even if it's traditional culinary herbs. It's just your perspective. So if you want to have a medicinal herb garden, then look up what your culinary herbs can do for you, and then you get more bang for your buck. You can do both, you know.
So I'm just thumbing through the book a little bit, and I marked a few things that I liked. I'm definitely a believer of preventing rather than treating, but if you do have something that you need to treat, there's certainly all kinds of wonderful remedies in here that may help. But one of the suggestions that you mentioned for diaper rash is letting the baby run around for some of the time without diapers and teaching them some control. And I've only seen one person in my community do this, and I just thought it was great.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the things is there's so much use now of plastic diapers. And even the organic ones, or the very, you know, the more natural ones, they're very expensive. So subconsciously, I think sometimes parents leave their kids in diapers longer than they should. And then the urine is going to react to the chemicals in the diaper. But also urine then becomes ammonia, and that's sitting on our children's skin.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can just, I mean, my boys would be naked, you know, kicking their feet around, and occasionally there'd be a stream that came up and they'd get wiped off. But they never had diaper rash,
yeah.
Because it wasn't, okay, that's not true. Once one of my sons ate a bunch of clementines and got a diaper rash, but he was like 2. But you know, it wasn't something that, you know, we would just, if I thought there was something, you know, a potential, a little preventative, and letting them air it out. And it made my life much easier. A lot of my friends at the time who had babies were really having troubles with diaper rash, and I just felt so lucky that my baby didn't cry every time I wanted to change their diaper.
Okay, so I'm looking. This is like a reference book, this book that you've written, Herbal Healing for Children, and you can see all the different herbal preparations that you can make and the different herbs that are available and what they do and their benefits and some of their contraindications. And okay, so some of them surprise me, like you list bergamot, and I'm a big drinker of Earl Grey, which has bergamot in it, but you say it shouldn't be taken orally. Is it okay?
That is for infants.
Oh, okay.
And the essential oil.
Okay.
So you wouldn't want to take the essential oil internally. Now, Earl Grey tea, they have, one drop of the essential oil in, like, a half a pound of tea, or even more. So, of course, you know, all of these have to do specifically with children. And, of course, there's some variables, but this is a general guideline. Like, it's very easy to make your own bergamot tea. It's, you know, black tea, whatever type you like, and, you know, or if you want to go the traditional route using the type that is suggested. And then it's essentially a drop of essential oil.
Okay.
And it's pretty, you know, and pretty yummy.
Right.
Simple tea.
Yeah. I was just surprised to see that. I was also surprised, but now I think you've explained that this is for children, because I see here you talk about cinnamon, and half a teaspoon to a teaspoon can really be problematic, but that's for small children.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if I had a teaspoon of cinnamon, would that be too much?
Well, have you ever made yourself cinnamon toast and gone crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably not then. That'd probably be fine.
Okay. What I like to do
we forget that a lot of these are food herbs. And when we think about it in a medicinal application, you know, someone will say, well, is it safe to drink, you know, 2 cups of basil tea? But at the same time, they're putting like a half a cup of ground up basil in their pesto or
right.
cup, and they don't really make the connection that they're the same plant.
Well, I do agree that too much of anything is no good, because we could drown ourselves by drinking way too much water, and yet we can't live without water. So there is that. But just a little note about cinnamon. I've been really going nuts with cinnamon lately. I'm not buying it ground anymore. I buy the sticks, and I ground them up. And, wow.
What a difference, huh?
Such a difference. Whoa. Yes. So I recommend that.
Yeah. Well, it is so good. You know, it's antibacterial, antispasmodic. So if you're traveling, if you travel a lot, and you go to countries where you could potentially get diarrhea from the food, it's really an easy herb to find or to bring with you. And just a little bit of cinnamon tea can set you right pretty quickly.
That's a good thing to know. I will definitely do that. I like that very much. Another one of my favorites, and then I'll ask you what your favorite is, but one of my favorites is tea tree oil. I put it on everything. It's just amazing what it can do. I don't quite understand why it's so phenomenal, but it's cured a lot of skin-related issues.
And it's generally pretty safe, too. And a lot of people really like the smell. I use it to clean my house when if one of my kids has a friend over who's got a drippy nose or something. I hit all the places kids touch, so doorknobs and toilet handles and sink faucets and, you know, all of those places where kids, you know, video game controllers or whatever the kids are doing at the time. And, you know, I'm mouses and, you know, all that kind of stuff, and just use it as a preventative.
That's great. I never thought about that, and I'm definitely going to start throwing in a few drops. There's so many things in here that I really like, but we're actually running out of time. But I just wanted to mention, you've got all these great recipes. You've got a recipe for cleaning children's toys, which is vinegar-based, and I thought, how brilliant is that? So simple.
You can tell I used to work at a daycare center when I was in my late teens, early 20s.
And then you have a sinus headache pillow. Love it. Just to smell those eucalyptus and peppermint and rosemary leaves while you're resting is fabulous.
Yeah, and if you are prone to allergies and sinus infections, that's something that you can just have in your sock drawer.
Yeah, it's
you
great.
Know?
It's great.
And always, you know, and if you want to reactivate the scent, if it seems to have faded a little, just roll it around in your hands and crush up different herbs.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, and what's your favorite herb?
It depends on what day of the week it is. Right now I have a little bit of a sore throat. I've been doing a lot of talking on the phone lately.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's been very dry in North Carolina except for yesterday. So right now I'm really into elderberries.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Demetria, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for writing Herbal Healing for Children. And
thank you.
I invite people to visit heartofherbs.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, and I really appreciate you having me on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Okay. Have a great day.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food.